On this episode of Autographs,
what's your advice to folks who feel like they're troubled being themselves?
I think it's really accepting yourself. And I think it starts, you know, with, and I think that that's something that so many people maybe figure out later on in life, right? That they were always trying to be something else. And I think that that we know that it leads to unhappiness. So often though, we're unhappy and then we don't really actually accept who we are.
What's cooking, good lookins? We are back with another episode of Autographs. It's been a minute since I've done an intro. We are on today with Kara Golden, the co-founder of Hint and CEO of Hint, billion-dollar water company. Her water's delicious. If you can find it, please get it. If you live in the States, it's everywhere. If you're in Canada, it's a little bit harder to find. But anyways, that being said, she wrote a book recently called Undaunted, which was a book that I started in 2020, finished in 2021, and was one of my favorite biographies I've read to date. It's outstanding. So if you do want to go pick up a copy, go pick one up. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a really good book on resilience and bravery. It's a really authentic story of Kara just walking through life and not missing a beat. She's sharing it all. So enjoy, folks. Kara, thank you for being on, and I hope that you folks enjoy the show. Take care.
Hey, everybody. This is Nick Singh, and you are now listening to Autographs. You know, when you stop looking for acceptance and you just enjoy your life, the whole game changes.
You have to understand yourself. Like, and I think the real answer is real giving. Is that I don't understand why people don't get that if you give purely, you get.
We get good at what we do the most of. You nurture the process of like going to yourself and listening to yourself, and you get very good at honing your own intuition.
Did I actually make people stop and go, whoa, humans are capable of more than I thought? You're great at a certain skill, and you can then put that skill to use to help somebody else. That's fulfillment.
My hope is that this show inspires you to just feel like you can just be yourself, have fun, and enjoy your life too. So enjoy and take care out there.
We'll be off the record for as long as we need to. How does that sound?
Okay. Yeah, totally. Are we doing video? I mean, or?
Yeah, video. Video's of preference, but it's not an absolute.
Good.
If you want to.
No, we can. I just want to make sure. And how is the sound?
It's excellent. I think I'm hearing you through that SM7B quite well. Can you hear me all right?
Yep. I want to make sure. I always get them confused.
Yeah. No. Take your time. I would move that. Is that on a boom arm? Is that what that's on?
Virtual. It is.
I would move it a tad closer.
I will. I just want to make sure. And even though it's coming through the speaker, versus headphones. You're fine with it?
No, yeah. Take your time. I'm okay. Doing audio natively through the Zoom. So if you want to capture your own local audio, my audio might bleed through a little bit, but normally it ends up being pretty fine.
You understand this stuff. So
I'm getting
good at it, but it's pretty scary when I'm actually the one that knows more in the room, actually, which is like happening more and more.
Yeah, so I know. It's weird how much you learn about gear and tech over the years when you start doing this sort of stuff. It's really random.
Yeah, I started out in with thinking that I had all the best equipment, and then I didn't at all. So it was painful. And so now I've got all kinds of great stuff.
No, you look great. It looks like you're even recording on like a 4K cam or something.
I am. I've got, the camera was a good purchase actually. And then, and now, I mean, a lot of our video stuff that you see on like Facebook and Instagram, and I mean, that stuff is just QuickTime. I mean, we're just like playing around with that stuff, but it's been sort of work in progress along the way. But my biggest learning was not, I had a Yeti mic, and yes, it was actually picking up too much.
Really? Oh, because Yeti mics they can be oddly omnidirectional. So they have a switch on the back. So you can choose which one you want.
And I went through this whole process too with my book. And so it was like, I had access to just amazing sound engineers through Harper, through HarperCollins and through Audible. And I mean, it was just, it was such a big learning for me. And
did you record everything at home or did you go to a studio to do it?
No, because again, like I was doing it during the pandemic and actually it's a story in and of itself.
Tell me the story. I love your stories. I love your, and by the way, I have a quick question for you. Well, two things.
Yeah.
One, is that Buster in the background? Or is that Sadie?
No, that is Sadie. I wish I could show you what she's doing right now. So it's so funny.
I wish you could too. Is she there with you?
Yeah, she's over. Sometimes we hear her snoring over there too, because she had at the beginning of the pandemic for the US in March, I found this bump. It was like while the world was like falling apart, March 20th, she's showing me her belly. Like she's a Labrador and she's just, you know, and I'm laughing. And then all of a sudden I look at her, I don't know, like her teeth were showing and there was this bump. And I actually thought she had a tooth infection. In her mouth. And I mean, she's never sick. She's always like, I mean, it was just weird. And so I was looking closer at it and I was confident she had a tooth infection. And so I take her to the doctor and she has sarcoma. She has cancer of the jaw.
What?
I know. It was like, it was insane.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. That's really sad.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. And anyway, I won't take you through all the gloom and doom of the whole thing. But anyway, that was what social media was great for, because all the vets were basically shut down in the Bay Area. And it was emergency cases only, and cancer wasn't an emergency. And it was just, I mean, I posted it on Facebook. I said, actually, I should tell Sheryl Sandberg, I should be like a Facebook commercial for this, because I posted it and I said, I need an ultrasound somewhere in the Bay Area that I can drive to. And someone's got to know somebody who's got an ultrasound that I can figure out exactly if this thing is spread. And anyway, so somebody wrote me in like 20 minutes. They said, hey, my friend's a vet and she's got an ultrasound equipment and she'll do it for you. And literally she ended up living it was like 15 minutes from my house. It was, you know, no big deal. Anyway, so the net of it is that I end up finding out that I live in Marin County. I end up finding out that there are four dental, let me get this right, veterinary dental oncologists in the country. And one happens to be like in the next town over.
I mean, it was just kidding me.
No, it was crazy. So anyway, the net of it is she had a third of her jaw removed. And so I didn't know how it was all going to pan out. And
sure, yeah.
Anyway, and I thought it was going to get it was on her upper jaw. And I thought it was going to take away the nose. Imagine, you know, her Labrador, you know, the cute nose and everything. And I was like, what am I doing? Right. On so many levels. But she had just been on a 5-mile hike with me that morning. Like, I mean, she seemed totally normal and healthy. And so I'm like, what am I doing? Anyway, so the other thing that happened on social media, one of our investors, do you know Sandy Kleiman by any chance?
No, I don't know Sandy Kleiman. Who's she with?
Anyway, he's in LA. He used to run CAA Digital. He's awesome, actually.
Wow.
He's
like, okay, yeah, that's badass.
He's a super good guy. He's like, I don't know, he's probably, I would guess, mid-70s. Like, he's just totally retired. He's like,
He's just on it.
He's just a good guy. Yeah. And he's on my Facebook and he's like, hey, I heard about your dog. I invested in this pet oncology program. And I was kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, I don't really have time to talk about this conversation. Yeah. And then after we got the surgeries, like, you should really talk to this guy. He's a doctor. Anyway, they've actually got an FDA-approved medicine that fights the cells. And again, once I got the surgery, I was like, so anyway, so she's been on chemo since since day one. And, but it's no, like, she hasn't gotten sick. She's just totally, and we've had her checked once a month and none of the cells have grown back. I mean, it's amazing. But anyway, she, while she was healing, I started doing more and more of these interviews for my book and also just Zoom meetings. And she just sits in my room on her dog bed. And now, I mean, it's so funny because we have to like wake her up, you know, to, she has her hike in the morning and then she comes in the room. And so the big joke with all of my family is like, where's the podcaster in there? And they're not talking about me. They're talking about her because she just like sits there in the room.
Fucking hilarious. I know, you have to be kidding me. What about Buster? Okay, the whole reason I brought this up is because I have a dog named Buster.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So I was just like, there's no way we have the same name dog. I've only met one other dog named Buster.
Buster's just super funny.
What kind of dog is Buster?
He's a lab too. They're English labs. And so he almost
brother
looks
and
like
sister or?
No, I got her first and then actually I was looking for a brown English lab and apparently they're really hard to find, or they were when I got them like 10 years ago. And the breeder actually reached out to me and said, at like a couple of months after I had gotten Sadie, and said, hey, are you still interested? And I said, oh, I already got a dog. And she said, oh, that's too bad. Somebody gave this puppy back. And I said, what do you mean gave the puppy back? And I was just like curious, right? Why, who would give a puppy, a brown Labrador, ooh, back? I mean, sad. This is crazy. And she's like, oh yeah, it's a really sad story. Like they didn't have a baby. And then they got a puppy first and then the baby came, and basically like the guy
couldn't do both.
And so you gave the dog back. And I was just like horrified by the whole story. And so anyway, I went, it was like an hour away, and I said, can I bring my new puppy? And she's like, you shouldn't have two puppies at the same time. And I said, why? And she said, well, they'll just like, they won't get trained.
Oh, this doesn't sound like Kara Golden at all.
No. People. And this, so I was like game on.
Wait, yeah. On. Why can't I have two puppies at the same time?
And so she, yeah. So Sadie totally turned into like boss lady. I mean, she was just at, you know, 6 months old. She's just like, go here, do this. And then anyway, he's a trip too. So many people know these stories just from even, you know, social media, that he got cancer a couple of years ago, and he got paw cancer, which was just insane.
Oh my God.
And so I know. And so anyway, I just, I know like a little too much about this stuff now. And sadly, I think you live in Canada, right?
I live in Toronto.
In Toronto. Yeah. So
have you ever been here?
I have. In fact, Melissa, I don't know if you talked to Melissa. She's on my team. She's from Toronto.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. In fact, she may be there. I don't know. She's jumping back and forth between right now between Vancouver and her boyfriend lives in Vancouver, or he lives in San Francisco, but he's from Vancouver. And so
that explains it. Why your team's so lovely. You have a Toronto, you have a, I'm kidding, but your team really is. I have met a lot of the teams of folks that I've had really been privileged to have had on the show, and all of them are lovely in different ways. Your team was unquestionably, and I'm not just saying, I never say this, they were so amazing the whole way through. They were so good. But I'm awesome. Really sorry that both your dogs have cancer. I brought it up to be lighthearted, to say, oh, we both have a dog named Buster.
No, but they're doing great. I mean, that's the thing. I've like learned so much about it that it's not, you know, don't count them out, because Buster's been in remission for like 3 years. And he's like, and what I figured out is, you know, you just tell people what's going on and, you know, and just fight it, right? And a lot of times it's pretty amazing what you'll figure out along the way. And now so many people have come to me about dogs because they're like, how'd you figure this stuff out? And I said, I don't know. You just, the more, that's what social media is really, I think, great for, is that if you tell people what's going on with you, like whether you want a job or, you know, you're, oh, what I was sharing with you before.
Yeah, I actually forgot where we were at. This is
great. The book.
Okay, let's come out of the wall for a second. Hold on, guys. The book.
Sorry.
which was one of don't be sorry. This is the shit right here. I love it. This was one of the best books. I started in 2020. I finished it in 2021. I took a break over reading over the holidays, but this is one of the best books I read in 2020. And I was like, oh, I've read a ton of biographies, and like Jobs is up there and all this. This is one of my favorite biographies I've ever read. It was up there with Jobs. It was up there with Conrad Hilton's story. Those all of them have nothing to do with one another, by the way. But it was really well written. But anyways, continue though, because you were saying something before.
You were asking me about doing the audio version of the book. Yes. So in the middle of the pandemic, that was, you know, what I was tasked with. By the time I was ready to, you know, I got everything turned in, then I went back to my publisher and they said, so we're going to just skip doing the audio version of the book. And I said, why? And they said, because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So I knew a few of my friends who were authors, and they said, you know, I don't know, our publishers like connected us with the people. And then finally, I was, my kids go to school with a couple of different artists, one who was in Metallica and the other one Grateful Dead. And I said, there's got to be audio studios around Marin County somewhere. Yeah. I just have to figure it out. So anyway, I talked to them and they're like, oh, yeah, for sure. There's studios. Otherwise, you can come over to our house and, you know, just get an engineer with you and we'll hook you up with that person too. And so anyway, I didn't end up doing it at their house. I ended up doing it at some of the studios. But again, I think that the more you sort of reach out to people, what I figured out, and really be honest with what you're looking for and clear what you're looking for instead of accepting no, then I don't know. I think that that's the key thing, that you can figure it out.
Yeah, I know. It's one of my favorite things about you, Ajay. I wanted to, that's a great place to maybe say this. I was going to say to you, I wanted to acknowledge you, and I really believe in my heart, Carrie, you have one of the bravest souls that I've ever had a chance to just be around and interact with. I'm not sure if you've received that compliment before, but you are a brave son of a gun every single step of the way through. It's really beautiful and encouraging to see.
That's very nice. Well, I don't know if know if it's bravery or stupidity, right? It's just, I have a good time along the way.
They go hand in hand. But it's really beautiful to see. And I'm not surprised that you got your book done during the pandemic. I'm glad that it got done. I'm a big fan of Audible. I didn't even check to see if it was on there because I had the physical copy. But yeah, that's sweet though. No, I really mean it. What I want to ask you actually, before I say that, what was it like recording your own book? I've never asked anybody that. What was it like reading your own book aloud? Because it takes a really long time. It takes a really, really long time from what I understand.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was for a 200 and change book like mine. It took like 5 days. And you really have to dedicate yourself because you get tired, right? You have to have some, that's the key thing that I've learned about having a sound engineer, is that you've got to have somebody there who is saying, you know what, your voice is going down, right? Yeah. You're just naturally, and you don't hear it because you're reading, but it's really important. And I think that's what takes so long.
Was it weird at all reading your own stuff, like again and again, or?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was a little bit, but I think that, again, you have somebody with the right equipment and who knows what's going on. And sure. And I think that the key thing for me was that I wrote the book, right? So I think that sometimes you've got ghostwriters that are doing stuff. And for me, I had editors who were going in and editing, but it was also my story. So I knew it really well. And I wrote it. It was like 4 years in the making. And so I feel like I've been editing and editing and editing. And there were so many, it was a 600 page journal for like 4 years of I just kept writing. And I call myself an accidental entrepreneur, but I call myself an accidental author because I didn't dream of writing a book. I mean, it, I'm not going to lie, it's pretty cool to be a published author and Wall Street Journal and Amazon bestseller and all that kind of stuff. But it was not on any list of mine to go do, even though I was a journalism major. And, you know, that for me, people are like, oh, come on, I'm sure you wanted to write a book. I'm like, no, I didn't really think about it. But for me, doing a lot of traveling for my speaking as well as just with my company. Sometimes you go to these, you know, small towns in Arkansas and Alabama and, you know, places where I just happen to not know people that are living there, and I didn't want to sit there and watch TV. So I just started writing, and a lot of plane rides. And I just kept myself busy just by continuing to write. And then about a year and a half ago, I felt like there were a lot of people that I would talk to about these stories that didn't get to go to that conference or were not an employee at a company where I was speaking. And I thought, gosh, I should just bind all of these notes together and just give it out to people. And so I thought about doing that. And then a few of my friends who were authors were like, you should publish it. You should get it. And I was like, how do I do that?
I just have to say, that sounds so hilarious off the bat. Like, I'm just going to bind all these together and hand them out. And your friends are like, oh, you mean a book? Like,
yeah.
Kara, don't you mean you just want to make it into a book?
No, I mean, the whole process was hysterical. I mean, suddenly I had an agent, and then I said to the agent, hey, I'm going to be in New York next week. Can you set up some meetings with the publishers? And she started laughing at me. She said, you don't do it that way. And I said, well, what way do you do it? And she said, well, you have to have 6 months in advance, and you have to have a outline together. And I said, okay, well, let's get the outline together. Come on, let's go do this. I can go back to New York in 6 months, but let's just go and figure this out. The other thing that I learned about writing a book that I've shared with other people who are thinking about writing a book that I didn't know was there's a lot of publishers that want you to write a certain book. And I think that, right or wrong, that's not what I wanted to do. And some of the best advice that I got from a few friends who are published authors in different categories, totally different books, but I mean, if you're only going to write one book or two books, I said, is this the book that I want to write? And the answer for me with a lot of these publishing houses was, you know, I don't want to write that book. And so even if I made money on it or it got me more speaking engagements or whatever the purpose is, I just said, I want something that is helpful to people. And there were some publishing houses that said, okay, well, go have someone else publish that. And I was like, all right, you know, that was my walk away. And then there were, and then Harper Collins, Harper Leadership in particular, looked at this and they said, you know, you have probably two books here, right? And I said, how long is a book? Like, can't we do it in one book? And they said, no one's going to read a 600 page book. You got to take it down to a couple hundred pages. And so that was the hardest part. And because I'll always be the founder, but I'm still the CEO of the company that I run Hint. It's, it wasn't fair to basically, you know, commit myself to sitting there and editing. So I got a couple of editors, including my husband. My husband's a co-editor in the book, but
helps with everything. That guy is a gem. The entire book.
What was your favorite story? Do you remember any of the?
I have too many. I will answer that in a sec, but I will say the process of taking a 600 page document and making it 200 is
hard.
Ironically daunting in reference to the book. By the way, if anybody doesn't know Kara, I almost forgot to cue you up and do an intro because we just started getting rolling, but Kara's the founder of, and my favorite thing about Kara, I want to preface this before I say the value of her company, is that she's one of the few founders that I get to speak to that I truly feel in my heart is in equal parts deeply fulfilled with her life and also very well achieved. And a lot of folks orient themselves in a way where they're looking for achievement and they might even be trying to find a sense of fulfillment, but get brought in by the current because the tide is so strong to go out and achieve something, be it a business, a career, whatever it may be, that they forget to find meaning along the way. And Kara is somebody who never settled. And along that way, she founded a $1 billion company called Hint. It's the best water I've ever tasted. I'm not just saying that.
That's so nice.
Unfortunately, unavailable in Canada. I was supposed to save a bottle for this interview. My mom.
There are a few stores. I told you some members of my team are from Toronto. Yeah. If you told me.
I will have to find them. It just wasn't, it didn't look like, it wasn't like as easy for me to find as it was because I've been in the States and they're at CVS's and stuff everywhere. So I just kind of, they're not at local variety stores here, right?
No, it's, there's a natural food store,
It's not Whole Foods. Yeah,
they don't sell it at Whole Foods, but it's, I want to say it begins with an L.
Loblaws?
Might be Loblaws.
Loblaws is a huge chain, It's like a, Kroger's or,
Do they have a natural sort of, do they have a store that they own that is affiliated with them?
They have a ton of stores, but none that are coming to mind.
I'll think of it.
Yeah,
I'll
let me know because I will pick up more because I was supposed to have a bottle left and I just accidentally finished them. And my mom did as well. She loves it. She was an even bigger fan than I am, and which was a huge blessing. So I want to thank you because she normally is drinking Coke and stuff. And she couldn't get enough of it. She's like, my favorite flavor is grape and this stuff is to die for. So thank you for
nice
the bottles.
To hear.
But yeah,
totally.
That's a cue up though. My question for you is, what was the moment that you decided to write the book? This is what I'm curious about with folks. I want you to go back to the exact moment, if you can find it. I was listening to some stuff and nobody's asked you that yet. The direct moment that you said, I'm actually going to write a book. I don't know if it's going to be called Undaunted, but I'm going to write a book. What was the moment? Was it a sentence somebody said? Was it an insight you had? Because what you explained to me is you were kind of just mildly writing lines, just very generally, and then eventually you called an agent. But what was the moment that you said, I'm going to write a book?
Well, when I was, as I mentioned, I was out speaking a lot. And, you know, there's always the Q&A session at the end when you're a panelist or you're a keynoting. And there's always been, but it started to get more and more of a topic around how it was almost like a statement of how I was different than so many people in the audience, that I was a risk taker. I was bold. I was this. And I felt like there was this misunderstanding that existed for entrepreneurs that they were either unicorns or they were failures. And I'm always super interested. I'm constantly reading and, you know, books as well as stuff in newspapers about someone's journey. And I think that the stuff in the middle is the most interesting and oftentimes where you learn the most lessons. And so I started in a lot of my talks talking about when people would ask me a question about something, I would pull out of my back pocket, like they'd say, how did you get funded? And then I would, you know, talk about, you know, the journey and, you know, again, I think out of my own boredom, sometimes I wouldn't want to tell the same story. So I would share different stories along the way. And then I started thinking, I want to just keep refining those stories. People started writing to me when I started sharing my own stories. People started writing to me after the conference, generally on like a LinkedIn. They'd find me and they'd say, you have no idea how much that story helped me not feel alone, know that I can do it, inspired me to go and do that. Why aren't more leaders out there talking about the hard stuff? Instead, when you hear leaders on stage, they're often talking about how great their company is or how somebody screwed them when they left their, whatever the topic is. But why not just talk about the journey and about, you know, some of the things that went well for you versus, you know, some of the things that didn't go so well and what you learned from them. And again, this was happening over and over again while I had this journal. And so that was the point when I said, I think I just want to publish this. And if I can do that, maybe I can help a lot of people. What I think is fascinating is that's as far as I had gotten. I often say that the key thing in kind of starting is not getting too bogged down in kind of, you know, where you're going. Because if you do that, oftentimes you'll be like, oh my God, it's too hard. I can't make it, right? And so I think for me, I had gotten that far. I thought, okay, I've now committed. I'm getting a publisher and we're going to get it out the door. I'm now hearing from so many people about the book, not just entrepreneurs or, you know, would-be entrepreneurs, but also leaders who are talking. I had a leader CEO reached out to me the other day and tell me that she was, I don't know her, she was gifted the book, and she's going through a really challenging time during the pandemic. And she said, you have no idea how your story of just saying it as it is has helped me, because I felt it. I always hear about these stories where that was when they were with the company and this is maybe what I've got to do. But because you're sharing these stories and you're still there, right? It just makes it that much better, right? You own the fact that there were some challenging times, whether it was with my investors or, you know, with Whole Foods or whatever it is. And, you know, and at some point you have to say it is what it is. And anyway, she shared that with me and I thought that's exactly the reason why I am today, right? I want to help people. And if I can help more people just by getting that message out there through a book versus it can't scale doing one-on-one. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly what you're saying.
Right? It can't scale. And for me, it's less about it. It's less about money. It's actually about, you know, helping people. And I think that the other thing that I'm very curious about that, again, I didn't anticipate having this conversation with people after the writing the book, but it's sort of naturally occurring, is I'm a Gen Xer and I'm, you know, sitting in C-suite. I'm a female executive and I've heard from a lot of millennials that, you know, they were handed sort of a pile, right? That a promise that was not what they thought, right? And so they thought that it was super easy to be, you know, an executive and you can have it all and whatever the messaging is, and especially the women. And what I'm saying is it wasn't easy. Like there were moments when I thought this thing was shutting down for sure. And there were moments that I slowed down and there were, you know, really being authentic, I guess, about that's what they're saying. And so they're saying, where's the rest of you? Why isn't anyone else telling these stories? And so I think it's a really interesting conversation too, that is that I didn't plan on initiating. If that, but I'm,
it makes sense.
Right. I'm willing to have it. And the other reason why I'm willing to have it is that I have four Gen Zers coming up right behind. So yeah. I want millennials to do for my Gen Zers, right? Which I don't want them to think, here we are telling Generation Z in particular, be yourself, like do what you're passionate about, you know? And if we've got a generation that feels like they've been, you know, told a bunch of lies, whatever, they're disengaged, whatever that is, let's try and fix it, right? Let's try and all kind of, you know, own being yourself and whatever it is, so that millennials, as they grow up, right, and grow up the ladder as well, that they are able to really be the right managers for that next generation. So I think that is what I'm most curious about this book. And I'm speaking actually at McKinsey in a few weeks. And
are you?
That's really cool. Topic, which again, I'm like, that's, it's super interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wasn't planning on asking. This always happens whenever I have people on my show. And by the way, if you're hearing Slack getting pinged, I'm just going to quit that thing on my Mac real quick because I just keep on getting Slacks while I'm talking to you. But all of these questions keep on popping up. So I want to be able to get to some of the stuff I had planned. But I do have to ask you kind of three things now. I just have to. One is, how do you be yourself? I've never asked anybody that front on and front facing, and it's not meant to be answered. I don't know how to answer it. Actually, people have asked me that before. I've received a compliment of being authentic, but I don't know. It's a weird experience. You don't try to be authentic. Like, the nature of trying to be authentic makes you inauthentic almost. It's a weird game. So what's your advice to folks who feel like they're troubled being themselves?
I think it's really accepting yourself. And I think it starts, you know, with, and I think that that's something that so many people maybe figure out later on in life, right? That they were always trying to be something else. And I think that we know that it leads to unhappiness. So often though, we're unhappy and then we don't really actually accept who we are as individuals, right? And then we get angry or, you know, we blame, right? There's like a whole process that goes on there. But I think it really starts knowing that it starts with you and kind of accepting who you are and, you know, what you like too, I think is a whole other thing that people always ask me, oh, are your kids going to take over Hint? And I'm like, I don't know. I just want them to be happy. That's all I want. Right. Yeah. And I want them to find passion and I think that the thing that they will take from me and my husband is that we love what we're doing. In a time when 15 years ago, when I was starting this company, I was a tech executive. All my friends are tech executives. I lived in San Francisco at the time and then moved to Marin County. All my friends thought I was crazy, right? They're like, wait, why are you starting a beverage company? We'll hire you at Google. Like, what are you doing right now? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just not really interested in search engines. Sorry.
Yeah. Like, straight up. You know, sorry, Cheryl.
Right. Sorry. So yeah. And I said, you can drink my water though. It's like super good. And
they love your water, right? It was Google and Facebook. Did Facebook like
Google was the first place. Yeah. Okay, and, and this guy, Omid Cortesani, he actually, used to work with my husband at NetSuite and at Scape. I always get the two, since we work with NetSuite too.
Easily confused.
Yes. And so he worked with him at Netscape and he was, we were not going out of our way to actually share with people that we were, you know, that I had this crazy idea to start a company. But when I would get asked about it, I would own it. But I think, you know, that's another thing that I've talked a lot about and thought a lot about when I was writing this book is that people would say to me, oh, it was AOL. I was at America Online for 7 years and running their e-commerce and shopping. And it was a really exciting time. I was kind of handed this channel called Shopping. And there were, you know, I was one of the few women in the company. And people were like, oh, was it really bad? Like being a woman? And I'm like, some days it sucked. I'm not sure if it was because I was a woman. I think it was just, I don't know. I wanted more women there. So it was like that part of it kind of sucked. But what I really hated the most was knowing that my company was in Virginia and in New York and I was in San Francisco. And so I was thankful that I was able to stay in San Francisco, but my husband was an attorney. And so, you know, we thought it's such a pain in the ass to, can I say that? Pain
in the butt. Yeah, hell yeah.
To take another bar exam. And so we were just like, we're kind of in California for now, just to figure out any other great role. And so I got on the plane for so long. But as, you know, I went through this time that it was, you know, small. And then every week we were adding 1,000 people. And after a while, you know, I started looking around going, I mean, this is just crazy, right? There's so many people adding. And well, on the one hand, it was really fun.
You guys were adding 1,000 employees?
Oh, I mean, this is what happens in hypergrowth companies, right? It's like, I mean, you look at something like
1,000 a week. Did I hear that right?
Oh yeah. It was insane. What? I mean, it was like, it was all over the country, but it was,
still, I mean, like, whoa.
Yeah. And it was, America Online was a huge company, but that's what happens when a lot of these companies are growing. And I've talked to many people who have been at Uber or Airbnb or, right? Like it's what happens. And I think, and we needed a lot of those people along the way, but anyway, it was just, I was managing a group of a couple hundred people and sort of doing my thing and bringing in revenue. And then, you know, naturally we started to kind of not tank, but sort of level off. And it was really, you know, it was predictable. It was all of those kind of things. But I felt like for so long I was teaching and I wasn't really learning for the last few years. And I was getting sort of resentful, I think, because it wasn't about me anymore. It was about, you know, teaching people. And again, I think that that's another thing that I've learned. I didn't know it when I was in it, but something that I now talk a lot about, which is always be learning and be a little selfish about it. And I purposely hire people into my company that at any age that are better than me at things. I'm like, will you help me, you know, learn this, right? Or whatever it is. I can teach, but I also want to learn. And wow. Every single person that I bring in to this company, and sort of it's kind of a mantra inside of our company as well, that I encourage our managers. And it takes a lot of confidence at first for people to do that, right? Like they think, I didn't learn this anywhere. I'm supposed to hire people to go do like the job that I don't want to do, or right? Or something I don't have any knowledge of. I'm like, learn what everybody does on like top level. Don't ever allow yourself to not understand how things get done, because when those people leave, then you're screwed.
It's going to come down to you.
Yeah. It's going to come down to, I mean, you know, yeah. Right? It's going to come down to you. And so find the time to, and get curious, right? But then the other piece of it is also be accepting that it doesn't matter what your level is in the company, that to go and learn and figure out just different components and be able to roll up your sleeves. And eventually, and so that's what I've done since I left AOL. I love being scrappy. I then hire somebody in, but that way, I mean, people ask me all the time, how are you able to write a book and run a company and go do all this stuff? It's like, I'm good at hiring great people who do it better than me. But in addition, I never lose touch of how those, you know, I get a quick update. I'm constantly, you know, looking and glancing at things. And if they look weird, then I'm able to jump in. But I think, It's just such an important aspect and something that I've learned about, you know, me that I wouldn't have been able to say when I was at AOL.
It really, I've never heard anybody share sentiment the way that you just did. I didn't deliberately catch that when I read your book, that part of the reason leaving AOL, I thought that it was just, they made you an incredible severance offer and I get the location and stuff wasn't right. But to hear that it was a partly selfish move, because you stop learning, that's beautiful. Like I wish that people would get more selfish. One of the things that I think you're really great at that's made you receptive, because you talk a lot about customer feedback, that's made you receptive to customer feedback. And like customer feedback in the sense that it's both positive and negative. I would argue that right now it's actually we're more impacted, more human beings are impacted by negative news than they are by positive news. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not because they get less positive news. I'll use like a comment section as an example. You'll have tons of people saying your praises, but it's easy to point out that one person that said something negative about you. The thing about you is that you've always been it seems this way. I don't know if it has been this way. So I want to ask you, when you hear positive feedback, you really let it touch your heart. Like you really let it, you feel it. And not everybody receives it that way. A lot of people might just kind of let it roll off their shoulders or I thank you, but they're almost a little bit meek and standoffish about it because they don't want to fully engage it. How have you been able to just internalize those things that people say about you that are really nice?
Well, that's nice. Well, and I think, look, I'm human. I also take the stuff that people didn't like, right? Yeah. And I take it to heart. And, you know, I try not to be defensive about it too, because I also think that, you know, you can learn from what people say, positive and negative, but you also move on. And I think it's sort of the same thing with whether somebody says something positive to you or somebody says something negative to you, there's always like a little bit of a grain of truth in there. I mean, I remember when I was first launching my book and I was on this podcast and I had sort of thought that my mic was like not really great. And this guy was unbelievably unprofessional, but he basically, after 5 minutes, he cut the whole interview and it wasn't that bad. I mean, I had done a ton of them, but he just told me that it was unprofessional and that he started yelling at me. It was just like this, like it was just on like a lot of levels. But at that point, I remember thinking, okay, he's a jerk. But in addition to that, he might be a little right. And so it caused me to kind of sit there and look at exactly what it was. And really, like, I spent the evening on YouTube and going on my favorite Twitter feeds and just basically asking some of these people, what do you think? Do I have the right thing? What else should I do? All of that kind of stuff. So again, I think understanding that, I really do believe generally that people are two things, that they're good, right? I think that there's very few people in the world that are actually really awful and bad. They may do bad things,
yeah.
Right? But they may do bad things, but I think that it's generally because someone did bad stuff to them. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, my two cents. But I think also it sort of is the same kind of concept around when people say something is, you know, you're awesome, you're sort of iconic or whatever it is, I think that shouldn't stop you or shouldn't put you on like some pedestal where you're not able to actually keep learning. Because I think people who say that often just don't really understand the journey and some of the, you know, I've had failures along the way. I've had doubts. I'm human, right? But I think that the more, again, transparent that you can be with people about things, I think that the thing that I get probably the most common thing that people say to me is, you're just a real person. Right? You actually respond and things like that, that are just, to me, it's just common sense. Right. Yeah. And it's just not. And I think a lot of people would like to do that. I think that I'm not a big believer in kind of outsourcing things either, that I just think it's, you know, it's not, it's probably not, it's just oftentimes it just removes people and then they fear kind of going back in too.
No, that's a great answer. And I love it. I love it. I feel like being open to the bad makes you open to the good. I'm going to ask you some questions to not throw you off, but the whole purpose of that, I've reflected a lot. It's refining over time, just kind of how like the vision of Hint refined over time about what I want this show to be about. And by the way, I didn't even mention, it's great to see you again. Yeah. I saw you in San Francisco in 2017 backstage at HustleCon. That's where I think we first met.
Yeah.
Lovely then, equally as lovely now. So thanks again for agreeing to be on. But
totally.
But yeah, I figured that the show is called Autographs, so I ought to get people's signature, meaning like the thing that makes them. So I want to get to know you as a person. What kind of kid were you in high school and college?
I had all kinds of friends.
Okay.
That I think if you talk to any of my friends, I had all kinds of friends. I had this, you know, super geeky friends. And then I also had, you know, the really fun friends that were out, you know, partying and having a good time.
I did the same thing. That's so cool.
Yeah. And it was just, and it was funny because even still to this day, I'll explain to my kids how I know certain people. And, you know, I'm still in touch with so many of these people and they'll say, that is just so funny because they're not friends with each other. And I said, no, they were never. And again, as you grow up, you're respectful, right? Yeah. But of different people, you're probably not in high school, but again, it's in college, you're in different groups or whatever, but it's interesting because I think I was always that middle. I was the, even though I wasn't a middle kid, I was always kind of, you know, pulling different things out of different people because they sort of interested me and I wanted to learn. But I also wanted to have fun. Yeah.
Was it because for me, it was because I grew up playing ball. So I grew up hooping. So like that afforded me the possibility to be with kids that were more social. I don't know why, but basketball, we had a basketball high school. So that's that. But
yeah,
I did well in school. I tried really hard and I did well. So that afforded me the ability. And I loved being around kids who were just so much more intelligent. Were you the same way? Like what had those worlds collide for you?
Yeah, I think I had friends in student government early on, and I was kind of interested in that. But then, like you said, I had the friends that were fun. And I think also growing up in a house where, I mean, I even see this with my four kids, they're just four super different people. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that they don't appreciate each other. And I think that was, you know, in some ways it's something I talk about a lot, just even in business and sort of how to survive business situations. And I think it's the same with like friend groups. How I viewed it is that when things go wrong, if you don't have other options, right, then if you don't like what somebody says, or, you know, you just get stuck, or they go off with somebody else or whatever, I was just always just kind of, keeping my options open to be able to go and do lots of different things. And so I think that it's, life learnings along the way, but more than anything, that's what's fun too, because a lot of my high school and college friends have said the same thing to me about the book, that, they have all these stories that they'll share with me that I didn't even remember. My friend Robin from high school, actually it was right before high school.
I need to hear this.
Seventh and eighth grade. Well, she reached out to me on Facebook and she said, I still remember when we started a camp when we were 12, and I started laughing and I said, okay, I remember. And I remember now, it's like one of those things, but it just seems so normal to me. And I said, tell me what you remember about it. And she said, I remember you calling me and saying, hey, we're going to start a camp. I grew up in Scottsdale and it's in the summer. It's, 120, right? 120
scorching
degrees. Right. And so I have this idea that we're going to start a camp. And so she said, well, who's going to be at the camp? And I said, well, we haven't figured that out yet, but let's figure out exactly what we're going to do. And I have figured this part out. And she said, what's it going to, like, what are we going to do at the camp? And I said, so I'm going to go to the grocery store. And they used to have these giant boxes for like toilet paper and paper towels. And sure. I said, I used to do this as a kid, connect these into a city. And so I said, I think I can get enough of these boxes and we're going to connect them. And she's just listening, just going. And I said, we're going to build a city. No, that's too ambitious. Let's just say we're going to build a town. And it might end up being a city. And I mean, she's like, I totally remember this. And I said, I'm in. I said, okay, let me go to Safeway and see if I can get enough boxes. And she said, well, how are we going to get the people? How much are we going to charge? And I said, just come over to my house. Like, we'll figure all that out. Don't worry about that. And so we mapped it out and then we put on she kept asking me like, how much are we going to charge? And I said, let's put it at $5. Like, let's charge $5 a day to have all these kids come. And she said, well, where are we going to find these people? I said, let's just take a sign and go to the end of the street and we'll just like say $5. And she said, well, what if that's not the right price? And I said, well, we'll figure it out based on demand. Like, if nobody's biting, then we'll lower the price. And she said, okay. So all of a sudden we had like 10
people.
Kind of
sounds like how you build Hinge.
Yeah, no, totally. But along the way, I remember fondly just laughing. Right. Because we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
And again, I look back on stories like that thinking, people are like, of course you were going to be an entrepreneur and that you were, but I didn't know.
You had no idea.
I had no idea. I didn't know if $5 was the right price and I didn't know what I was sort of learning. And I'll never forget my brother came home And he was like, what are you doing? Because he actually fixed up cars in our garage. And I had now taken over his garage because we couldn't have all these kids like sitting, you know, in the street, right? Yep. Or on the lawn because it was going to be too hot. Yeah. And I said, I'm just going to use your garage for like a week. And he said, well, what are you doing? And I explained it to him. And he said, so wait, you're going to make like $50. And I said, well, I'm going to make 25 and Robin's going to make 25 and we're going to split it. And he was 15 years older than me. He just sat there and laughed at me and was just, I mean, in a good way, but he was just like, this is hysterical. You're 12.
It is hysterical.
And then he just walked away. And so the camp lasted for 3 weeks. And then I got bored. Then yeah, I was like,
ran
all right,
fucking camp. That's wild.
I know. Hysterical. But again, so many of my friends, that's the other thing that it's just jogged all these memories for people. The book has there. They said, we always knew you were going to go and start something. And I'm like, did you ever tell me I was going to go start something? Because I didn't think so. But
yeah, exactly. Everything in hindsight, right? That's incredible. How did you know Theo was the one?
So, it's funny. I say this to my kids all the time as we talk about in the book. We met in a bar in New York City. So I always share with my kids, I'm like, you actually can meet somebody in a bar.
Yeah.
Here, you know, and
it's possible.
It's funny, but I also say so frequently, I never would have dated him in high school or college because I didn't know what I wanted, right? And I think that he's a very different person than what I would have been looking for. And I think that that was the same for him, that, you know, I went to Arizona State University, big school, lots of fun, football games. You know, he went to Amherst College, very studious. You know, he had fun, but it was just a different kind of mindset. And I think when we both met, we were both curious, right? And he had never been to Arizona. He's like, do people ride horses and do like sometimes, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, actually, maybe they do sometimes. Are you sure?
Sometimes
you
they do. A few of my friends have horses, but I mean, they don't. Yeah, they don't ride them to school. He's like, what do you mean? You've seen a scorpion? I said, yeah, like a lot, you know? And anyway, it was fun because it was just such a, it was, I think part of, I mean, we've been married now 25 years and it's, wow. And we run a company together. And so many of our friends say too, when we first met, it was, people were like, this is just kind of weird. I mean, including the guy, Bruce, who introduced us, I knew him in high school and he was in law school with Theo. And he still says to this day, I never would have set you two up. We were just in the right environment. We were in an environment and just started talking. And I always say to people, like, you just never know what somebody's looking for. They probably can't articulate it or whatever, but it's still, you know, to run a company, I've been asked that a bunch with your husband and actually raise a family. I think it's just, we both really have admiration for each other's skills and they're really different. And I think, and we rely on each other, you know, too. I mean, he's really the operations. And like I said, he's a lawyer. So he was constantly, you know, trying to make sure as I was doing things, he was just listening like great lawyers do, but then also supporting me. Because he was like, look, this is, I get it. I get what you're doing. You're starting this company to really help people and encourage people to drink water. You saw a big change with yourself. His like full disclosure, I don't think this is what I would do if I were you. You've got great tech experience, but at the end of the day, if you're curious and you're happy and you're doing it and you've made some money at AOL, I go do whatever you want to do. I don't really care. And I think that that's, you know, another aspect that I hand to him too, is having a partner that supports you, even when they think that it's dumb, right? And, you know, they're not holding it against you. I mean, he, over time.
It's a good friend. Yeah, it really was.
It is.
A good friend. I mean, it's no different.
It is. And then it became a point where, you know, we have joint bank account and he's seeing $50,000 go out the door for caps. And he's like, you spend money like there's no tomorrow. Yeah. This is going to end really badly. And I don't want my house taken away and yeah. all that. And I want, you know, so I want to make sure that, you know,
you're a lawyer, right?
Right. And yeah. And so I said, come with me to the bottling plant. And that's when he went and he thought that this was such a, I mean, I think that for him, he didn't know this about himself either. He was inside of Netscape and then ended up going to a startup, a medical startup after this. He has always been really interested in health. His dad's a doctor in New York City, and he always would hear the frustrations that his dad had in trying to really help people. And when I said something very, very simple that really resonated with him, that if we could just get people to enjoy water, then we would not be fighting diseases like type 2 diabetes, hypertension. It really starts with, you know, adjusting and paying attention. And he said, stop there. Like that, what you just said is a really, really big idea. And I said, yeah, we just have to make water taste better. And that's when he was, that's when he started to really say, you know, this is so simple. You're not making health claims. You're just saying, just go try it because it tastes good. He said, that is really, really powerful. Here, my dad has been so frustrated trying to get people to go live a certain way and they don't do it. And then they run into trouble. He said, you're just saying, just go buy this $2 or less bottle that's going to taste good and your life will change. And like, that's just such a big idea. But as I, you know, share in the book, what I didn't know, I hadn't sort of really realized it after that point, was that we were not just starting a category, or I'm not just starting a company and a launching a new product, but also starting a new category, which is in any industry incredibly hard, because you've got to bring the consumer up to what you're thinking. And so while he was a quick study on the idea of, you know, people just need to drink more water, I mean, we've been spending 15 years trying to get people to really understand. And, you know, the base has continued to grow. But this year in particular, I think 2020, our direct-to-consumer business has tripled. Our, you know, overall company has grown over 50%. I mean, it's like, and I really think that health is an industry that has just skyrocketed in people's mind as important, and one that, you know, I don't think will go away. I think everybody's been trying to figure out, how do I stay healthy, whether they don't want to get COVID or they, you know, got it and they don't want to get sick again or you know, that to me, I think, has just been across the world. Health is so important to people.
I couldn't agree more. And by the way, it's the top of the hour. I'm good for time, but I'm my biggest thing is finding a way to be respectful for folks' time. So are do you have a hard out right now? Because I know that you are busy.
I just want to
no judgment if you do, by the way.
Yeah. I'm gonna probably you know what? I have to go in just like 5 minutes if that works.
Are you kidding me? It's more than time than I expected. Absolutely. And by the way, feel free to take the five for yourself. I don't want you to
No. We're good.
Meetings. But to wrap out here, because that was beautiful. I enjoy talking to you, so I could get lost in it. It's lovely hearing you speak. I'll ask this. I'll go for the big one. If you could, what message would you have for Theo and your kids that you would always want them to keep in mind?
I think that it's been a great journey, and a journey about trying, and like I talked about before, being yourself and just doing the best you can. And I think that that's one that I'm hopeful that everybody in my house, everybody that I touch somewhere along the way, knows that about me, right? And I think that we lose this whole concept of trying. You know, maybe our parents are sort of, or our teachers are telling us early on, but I think, again, being a lifelong learner is just really about trying and trying to figure out, you know, what you like and what you're good at and what you don't know anything about, but you're going to go figure out. I think that it just makes your journey that much more interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what other way better to end it than that. I'll go quick speed round with you and then we'll jump off. One word answer is the only rule here.
Okay. One word.
Good book. Yeah. I guess if it's not one word, you can say the title of the book.
I just started it. Cast.
Cast, the origin of our discontents. Hold on. I now have to ask, what is it about?
I don't know a lot about it, but it is going to be a hot one. So okay. About missing puzzle pieces of U.S. history.
Are you a history buff? Well,
I read everything, you know. Okay. I think that that's the thing. I can't even say what my favorite genre is. I bounce around a lot. And so while I'm always reading business books, I love history and I love trying to connect dots. And
me too.
I think it's so interesting. And I also think it's really interesting that so often we learn about history and it's not really what happened kind of thing. Yeah. Right. And so I think that that's where whether it's based on politics or religion or whatever. It's just, I'm always just so curious about.
I love that you're reading that. Have you heard of Will Durant?
I have.
Have you ever read Lessons of History by Will and Ariel Durant?
I haven't.
I'll send you a copy. It was one of my favorite books. Excellent book on history. They were two of the most famed historians of all time, husband and wife.
Yeah.
And they wrote a book condensing all of their major lessons. They had written many texts about history into this one little short, like 180, 200 pages.
Yeah, it's pretty. I know. I just haven't read it. So
it was fantastic. I think that you'll love it. But awesome. Anyways, let's put a pin in it there. I also want to say this just because I'm not looking for anything here. I would just like to offer it to you. I always try to make something at the end of this worth it for anybody that's kind enough to come on the show. You don't know this about me, but I grow a ton of really cool brands and part of some number one shows for some very large TikTokers and influencers and what have you. I don't need any more clients or business, but the biggest privilege for me I really believe that you have a place, Kara, on the platform. I believe that you have a place here and I would love for more people to hear your message. So,
If
I can connect you with some folks that could help you. I don't know who you have working on things, but they're doing an excellent job.
Thank you. I
would love to hear more people know about you.
That's so nice.
And yeah, I'll connect with your team because I'm being vague right now, but I'll get a little specific. But some of the people that I work with, they grew Tony Robbins' brand. They did some other very big influencers in the game as well from some large local TikTokers and VCs, et cetera. So they're great at what they
do. Yeah, I'd love to hear more. And we're looking at that kind of, we're doing some small tests right now but you haven't seen me on my TikTok. It's somewhat embarrassing to
some
extent.
I am following you all of a sudden, but yeah, just honest to God, like the person I'm thinking,
I don't know what I'm doing at all, but I was it was funny. My 15-year-old started laughing because he's on TikTok a fair amount and and suddenly I'm on his, you know, the FYP,
the For You page.
Yeah. And he was, you know, trying to get his arms around how he's never been on it, but he was like, my mom's on it. He came back and he said, Mom, that's because you're not like a normal boomer.
He's right. He's right. I don't want to.
And he said that they found you based on your age, that you're actually just kind of funny and you're not doing the dances. You're not doing, you know, you're.
What a compliment.
He just laughs, but he'll just give me little snippets of advice. He'll be like,
ask him if he knows Bryce Hall. So we launched Bryce Hall's a big TikToker on there. He probably knows him. If he wants, I'll try to get him. It might just be fun to get a video from Bryce's team or something like that. If I can make it happen for your kids, if they're big fans, he's one of the biggest.
Yeah. Well, tell Bryce to look at what I'm doing. We'll send him some hint too. Because I have no idea what I'm
actually
doing.
Actually, maybe I could get you on Bryce's show because that's a show that I co-produce. So it went number one in business in the first week. I would love it.
No, I know who he is. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a bit of a partier, but a young kid, right? So it's all good. But yeah, so we launched his show, went number one, and then we
did a YouTuber in the States who we grew to 50K in about 4 months. And none of it's paid stuff. It's all organic. We got him about 200K on TikTok in about 4 months as well. Worked with some other NBA players, launching exclusive series for them on YouTube, grew it to about 450K across 8 videos, a ton of neat stuff. And I'm really proud of it, but I'm not saying it because, again, I'm actually almost clocking bandwidth. But when I believe in somebody, I have no issue telling them, and I have no issue lending the resources that I've been able to leverage for some of the other people I've gotten a chance to work with. So if they can be of service to you, then I would absolutely love to see more of you on the internet, because you have a great—
Well, I would love to. And again, just to get the message out there, I mean, I think it's, you know, more than anything, I feel like there aren't a lot of women C-suite executives,
there's not,
that are out there that are, you know, there's some guys that are out there that are leaders that are talking about
some
stuff.
Guys, but there's only guys out there doing it.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same with, I mean, frankly, it's the same with podcasting. I mean, it's really interesting. And, and again, I don't just have women on my podcast. I have, you know, I have men, I have women, I have, you know, and we talk about a lot of stuff. And I think it's, anyway, I think it's just a different perspective. And I think that I have plenty of guys that are saying, hey, I want to come on my show's The Kara Golden Show. And
I know, I've listened to it. It's terrific.
Yeah. And I've had, you know, I don't know. I just, it's like me having this conversation with you. We just talk about stuff and,
So. No, but you're a fount of knowledge, and there's no pressure. I'm not looking for money here. I'm just really looking to help.
So. No, I'd love your help. I'm constantly trying to get better at stuff.
Sure. Yeah. That's what we do. And we've been very privileged to work with some people we've been able to consider that are best in class, and they look at us in the same fashion. And it's just, it's a real neat thing to be able to work with folks of that esteem. And you're definitely there. So it would just be, it'd be an honor.
Yeah, well, have a look and let me know, and let me know what you think.
I'll double back with, who should I double back with?
Just me. Just talk to me about it, and you know, when you're ready.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll shoot you an email, and then maybe we'll jump on like a 20 and then share a little bit more. And if it's of use, then by all means, go for it.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. But anyways, Kara, it was really lovely having you on. I appreciate all the extra time. What's something you're thankful for? And then I'll let you go.
Just thankful for being here. Right. And being healthy, and I'm super excited.
We're super over time, so I hope I didn't keep you from anything.
No, you're good. Okay, good. Well, have a great weekend, and we'll keep chatting.
God bless.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.